Chapter 35. The whole sick crew.
Across the main hangar, Sartoris watched dark figures moving toward him. He'd first seen them coming right after all the shooting had died down. Only a handful at first, then more, now dozens. Traveling en masse, a single organism made up of countless smaller components. They were close enough now that he could make out individual faces. Men he'd worked with for years on the prison barge, guards he'd called by their first names, soldiers who had followed his command with the utmost unquestioning loyalty, prisoners who had once shuddered in fear at his passage. They traveled together now, their swollen, disease-ravaged bodies pressing against one another, death as the final brotherhood. They were coming for him. Behind him, there was a sharp clank of metal on metal. A low, collective groan escaped the shadows, deep and ravenous, and Sartoris spun around and looked through the captured ships to catch a flicker of movement beneath the X-Wing. Somehow they had slunk around behind him, too. He could see them down there, huddled in the shadows, watching him.
Where did they come from?
That was lesson one from Imperial Corrections' playbook. One you never forgot. Never turn your back on the cons. Now Sartoris realized it was too late. The certainty of his death filled his belly like a big gulp of contaminated ice water. Droplets of sweat began to trickle down his spine, creeping between his shoulder blades and down into the waistband of his pants. The figures in front of him had jerked closer, seeming to advance in the interstitial space between moments, like footage from which the transitions had been removed. Their eyes never left his, and there was a slinking, primitive slyness to their movement. He wondered if they were still sizing him up, or if they just derived some atavistic pleasure watching him squirm. Within seconds, it wouldn't matter. They'd be close enough to launch themselves at him and tear him apart. They could even shoot him now if they wanted. They were all carrying blasters. The things behind him hooted out a scream. The inmates and guards in front of him screamed back, a call and response. Sartoris saw ropey strands of drool swinging from their mouths, human and non-human alike. There was a group of Wookiee prisoners, with what looked like whole waterfalls of saliva pouring down between their fangs and slopping over their chins, soaking their fur. They looked like they'd eat him alive instead of blasting him. Maybe they preferred their meat uncooked.
"Come on, then," he said grimly. "What are you waiting for?"
As if awaiting the invitation, they broke ranks and charged, and Sartoris, who up till that moment had no idea what his next move would be, looked around at the abandoned X-Wing and grabbed the fighter's wing, lifting himself up and onto it. He made his way with a jouncing, bandy-legged run up the wing and toward the cockpit canopy, pivoted and dropped down into the pilot's seat, reaching up to try to seal it shut, but the canopy was broken and wouldn't close. Within seconds, every flaw in his reckless plan became glaringly apparent. He could already feel both groups of the things moving below the X-Wing, their thudding collective strength and hunger surging as they rocked the fighter back and forth underneath him, trying to flip it over, while others climbed up the nose cone in front of him. The three Wookiee prisoners he'd glimpsed earlier had already taken hold of the canopy and were trying to rip it loose. Or maybe just haul themselves up high enough to attack him where he sat. He could picture their three woolly bodies hunched over the stump of his exposed torso, ripping and tearing whatever was left inside the kettle of blood that had once been the X-Wing's cockpit. For the first time, his eyes flashed down at the avionics display. The instrument panel held the milky glow of sleeping electronics, but it was brightening slowly now, as if activated by his arrival. Just above the throttle, the green targeting scope blinked steadily, and Sartoris saw switches for weapons activation, laser cannons, and proton torpedoes coming online. From above, several hands reached down at once and sank their claws into his neck. He could smell them now, the infected Wookiees, the salivating bronchial snorts of their hunger as their breath drew closer. Wet, hot saliva dribbled down his face, and he felt the press of something sharp and hard. Sartoris squeezed the trigger. His whole world jolted backward. The laser bolt burst from both sets of cannons at once, a blinding muzzle flash that vaporized the mob of inmates in front of him even as it threw him into reverse. The Wookiees that had been reaching for his throat disappeared, jerked away with a howl of anger and shock, and Sartoris realized the X-Wing was still skidding, propelled along the hangar floor by the recoil. It all ended abruptly with a jarring crash. the thrust engines of the ship hammering into something even bigger than itself, probably the hangar wall. He lunged up and out of the seat and saw he'd collided with an Imperial landing craft, a Sentinel-class shuttle that looked like it had been sucked in by the tractor beam and dropped flat on the deck.
There's an emergency hatch here somewhere. Where is it?
He vaulted onto the shuttle's hull, ran up, and felt the craft lurch underneath him. They were already down there, waves of them, and that screaming noise was cycling up again. When they hit the underside of the shuttle, he lost his balance completely and fell forward through the hatch. What came next was blackness. With a silent groan, Sartoris opened his eyes. He was lying on his back in the shuttle's darkened cabin, the corrugated steel pressing against his neck. Outside the reinforced Durasteel hull, he could hear them faintly scratching, slapping, pounding. There was a brief pause. Something much heavier slammed into it. An explosion. Blasters again, he thought wearily, and wanted nothing more than to just black out.
Did you bring them with you? A voice croaked in the darkness.
Sartoris jumped a little and stared up at several sets of eyes peering down at him. As his vision adapted, he realized he was looking at a group of men in ill-fitting Imperial uniforms leaning over him from seats mounted to either side of the shuttle's cabin walls. Reacting without thinking, he jerked backward and tried unsuccessfully to scramble away.
It's all right, the voice said. We're not infected.
Sartoris examined them more closely, his heart still wedged up in the tight pocket of his throat. Even amid everything else that was happening outside, the appearance of the men remained a shock. Their starvation-ravaged faces were little more than skulls with parchment-yellow skin stretched over them, lips drawn back in permanent sneers, cheekbones bulging grotesquely outward. One of them attempted what Sartoris supposed was a smile.
I'm Commander Gorister, the man said, clearly waiting for Sartoris to introduce himself.
When he didn't, Gorister sank back with a sigh and continued.
From what's going on out there, I can only surmise that you ended up here the same way we did.
Sartoris grimaced.
Something like that?
Gorister started to say something and a sharp slamming noise cut off his words. Outside the ship, the blaster fire continued, smashing and pounding against the armored hull. The commander waved it away with scarcely a glance.
They'll give up after a moment, he said. It's really just a reflex on their part.
Sartoris raised an eyebrow.
Reflex?
Certain learned behavior patterns are difficult to unlearn, even when grossly ineffective.
Another round of explosions slammed into them, the fire intensifying.
Sounds pretty effective to me, Sartoris said.
The commander shook his head.
Our hull is specially reinforced. We're essentially impervious to handheld weapons. Until they're able to decipher the heavier artillery, we're relatively safe. Of course, that's only a matter of time, isn't it?
His upper lip disappeared in his mouth with a soft, sucking sound.
They haven't pulled in many ships yet, but I suppose that's to be expected. Hovering out here at the edge of the unknown regions. There's not much traffic this far out.
He made a weak effort to point up to the cockpit, where the shuttle's instrument panel shone faintly. A myopic eye, afflicted with cataracts of energy lack.
We saw how it dragged your prison barge in, Gorister said,
and then, uttering a terrible, humorless chuckle that was more like a gasp.
Too bad they can't eat their own.
Who?
Sartoris asked. The man favored him with a wan expression that was less incredulity than outright disbelief.
What? Did you actually think your inmate friends out there were the only ones aboard?
Who else is there?
Who else?
This time the commander actually mustered a laugh. It sounded like a layer of dust being blown from a very old book. Perhaps one that had been bound in human skin.
Oh dear. You really don't have any idea what's going on, do you?
Sartoris felt a stirring of irritation he didn't bother to suppress from his voice.
Suppose you bring me up to speed.
It started 10 weeks ago, when the first tanks began leaking.
What tanks?
Gorister ignored him. There were those conspiracy theorists among us who still insisted it wasn't an accident, that we were all part of some larger experiment, which I suppose is possible.
Hold on,
Sartoris said, sitting up to face the man straight on.
Start at the beginning.
The commander paused, and Sartoris realized that the deputation of skeletons sitting on either side of him had leaned forward, listening intently, as if they'd never heard this story before, despite having ostensibly lived through it.
What can it matter now? Gorister said. We left Meglamine hauling top-secret freight, experimental military-grade ordnance for the Empire. All the usual caveats, on Lord Vader's own directive. Our destination was a testing base on Congee 7, outside the Brunet system. But we never got through the mid-rim.
He took a breath and let it out with great effort.
At first, the breach seemed minor, and it appeared that our engineers were able to confine it. Some of our scientists were even able to study the effects it had on human physiology, the lungs and larynx in particular. We assumed that they had it contained.
He paused and cleared his throat.
But that turned out not to be the case for long. The infection spread quickly through the entire Star Destroyer. Soon, no one was safe.
Wait a second, Sartoris said. You're telling me there's 10,000 more of those nightmares staggering around out there?
Oh, my goodness, no. Some of us did manage to escape, obviously, or tried to, and a few showed signs of natural immunity. Using their blood, our medical officers were able to synthesize an antivirus. As I'm guessing yours probably did too, based on the fact that you're still here. Sartoris just grunted, not inclined to go into his own random immunity to the sickness. Gorister didn't even seem to notice. We sealed off part of the ship, he said, and injected ourselves with the antivirus. At first, it seemed like there would be enough to go around.
Another thin and ghastly attempt at a smile.
It didn't last as long as we'd hoped. There was more in the biolab, but of course, we couldn't get back to retrieve it. That was when the plan began to change somewhat. Of course, many of the crew were eaten before they could change over, torn to pieces and, well, consumed, I suppose is the word. Gorister swallowed, seeming to find something particularly distasteful in this part of his narrative. At first, we tried to gather up the remains. We put them in a waste facility, chopped them up, thought it might be a way to keep them from changing, you know. And even that isn't always successful. But in the end, we were outnumbered, and there really wasn't anything to do but run.
He flashed a cold, flat glance up at Sartoris.
Until they found out how to activate the tractor beam.
They can think?
Sartoris envisioned the screaming thing staggering around outside the ship, pounding and firing at it almost randomly with blasters.
That's crazy.
Oh, it's madness, Gorister agreed,
blinking at him with the mildest of curiosity.
All I know is that they were waiting for us inside the hangar when we came back in. The first man out of the hatch got his head ripped off at the shoulders.
He licked his lips.
After that, we sealed ourselves back in, sent a distress signal, and settled in to wait.
How long have you been trapped here?
10 weeks.
Sartoris felt his mouth drop open. He couldn't help it.
You mean you've been canned up here inside this ship for 10 weeks?
There were 30 of us originally. Now we're down to 7, including myself.
The commander sighed, eliminating what sounded like the last of the air from his lungs, and sagged against the bulkhead behind him again. His filthy uniform was so big on his now emaciated body that it bulked up almost comically around his shoulders, like a child playing dress-up.
We keep trying to make comm contact, but all frequencies are jammed. I believe that also might be a deliberate countermeasure on their part.
When his eyes found Sartoris's again, they were colorless and dispassionate, the eyes of a man delivering a lecture that he'd prepared years earlier.
You asked earlier how I thought they could activate the tractor beam. They learn, you see. That's part of it.
Those things out there?
Sartoris asked.
But they're animals.
In the beginning, perhaps. But consider, the ones that changed on board the destroyer 10 weeks ago don't even bother attacking this shuttle's reinforced durasteel armor with blasters anymore. They've already grasped the fact that it doesn't work. It's the new arrivals, the inmates and prison guards, who are out there shooting at us now. And if you listen, you'll see that they've already stopped, too. He snapped his fingers, a brittle pop. That's how quickly their behavior changes. Sartoris realized he was right. The blaster fire outside the shuttle had stopped, just as Gorister had predicted.
I think it has something to do with the sickness, the commander said. The way it was initially designed, they form clusters, tribes, swarms, and they communicate with one another. I'm sure you've heard it.
Sartoris thought of the screaming that he'd heard, the weird cyclic quality of it, back and forth, call and response in the hangar.
And that way they are all able to adapt at the same time, Gorister said. As one, like a kind of system-wide upgrade. Do you see?
Sartoris shook his head.
What are you talking about, designed? You mean somebody created all this on purpose?
Gorister studied him in silence for a moment, with what might have been the tiniest of smirks.
Naive, aren't you? He asked. I told you we were carrying top-secret weapons. How long have you served the Empire?
Sartoris didn't bother to provide an answer. He'd noticed something else that bothered him even more than the smirk on the man's face. Throughout the course of their conversation, his fellow soldiers had begun edging slowly closer to him, and they were licking their lips compulsively, over and over. Sartoris squirmed back a little farther. For the first time, his gaze fell on the stack of uniforms folded neatly on the seat in the corner.
What happened to the rest of your men?
He asked.
You must understand.
Gorister's voice was soft now, no longer mocking. In fact, it was nearly sympathetic.
We had ample water here inside the shuttle, but precious little food, and it's been 10 weeks. It was nothing more than a simple matter of survival. We were starving, you see.
Sartoris frowned. The men were getting to their feet now. It suddenly occurred to him that they might have been sitting here saving their strength until this moment.
Hold it!
He stood up, backing away, and felt his shoulders hit the wall behind him.
We're not like them.
Of course not,
Gorister murmured, dismissing the idea.
We drew lots. To keep things fair, we gave each man a quick, humane death. At first, we threw the remains out there.
He nodded above at the emergency hatch.
To those things, as if that might somehow satisfy them. But it only made them come back. So we ate the remains, too. In the end, we sucked the marrow from the bones. But none of my men felt any pain. I promise.
One emaciated hand slipped into his uniform jacket and produced a small transdermal patch.
And neither will you.
What is that? Norbutol,
Gorister whispered.
A paralytic. You'll just go to sleep. And when we're rescued, the Emperor will recognize your sacrifice with the highest of honors.
Sartoris started to say something else. He realized that the commander had told him there were 6 other men, and he only saw 4 of them. Then he felt a pair of hands grabbing him from behind, pinning his arms behind his back.